2FM.
With Green Farm, healthy snacking made easy with Green Farm's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Thank you to the fantastic Jenny Green. Jenny's back tomorrow at 3. It's Tuesday, the 24th of November, and this is Game On.
So coming up today, former Louth footballer Shane Lennon joins us to discuss what will define success for the wee county under Mickey Hart.
And then the honour falls to Jim Meehan to repulse those who would try to snatch the title from Louth's grasp. And here it is. Louth are All-Ireland champions for the third time. Among our memories of this epic game will be our last look at the old Hogan Stand, which honoured the memory of Gaeldom's Mark.
And that clip is so old, we couldn't really hear it.
1957.
It was 1957, all right. But back to today, and Champions League is back. Mark Langdon and Stephen Kelly are standing by.
We're going to go into this game trying to win it, of course, and then try to win it well with a good performance, because we've got games coming thick and fast. Get to 10 points was always the main, as quickly as we can, the main point. But that defeat was a big blow last time.
In racing, we've Henry de Bromhead on Honeysuckle's return. Plus, we're asking, how far away is a return of indoor sport?
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game on 2FM. So, Mickey Hart has taken over in Louth, but in Laois, Eddie Brennan and his backroom team of Niall Corcoran and Tommy Fitzgerald are set to depart the Laois hurling panel. They had 2 years in charge, but they won't be going forward in 2021, although one imagines they won't be on the sidelines for too long. But seeing skies that we had such a busy show last night and we could get nowhere near soccer, seeing as Marie took over with the GAA football and went on and on and on, we should get to the soccer tonight, guys, shall we?
Absolutely.
Is that okay with you, Marie?
Yeah.
Well, she's a night off before Liverpool, so willing to warm up on it.
I'm in cruise control right now.
What does that mean?
That means I'm going to take it easy tonight. No GAA. No Liverpool. Bit of Liverpool. Not too much. Might even give Manchester United an old world, Ruby.
I don't know about that, but I'm sure we have Mark Langdon and Stephen Kelly on the line. But anyway, I was looking at the Premier League this morning, and by my maths, it's, what, 9 games into the Premier League, which is a little over a quarter of the way. And looking at the Premier League table, it looks quite different to last year's table. Mark Langdon is on the line. Mark, Spurs are on top, Liverpool are second, Man City are in 13th, Man United in 10th, and poor old Sheffield United can't seem to get a kick.
No, they definitely can't. I think that definitely the lack of pre-season has played a part for some teams, and you know, Liverpool are still right up there, and they dominated it last year. But I feel like if you're ever going to get a sort of surprising end again, it could come this year, because it is pretty chaotic for the teams. There's absolutely sort of no planning going on. The big teams are rolling from game to game to game, having to play every midweek as well. The squads are being stretched. They're probably more vulnerable than they have been in previous times. And while Liverpool seem to be able to cope with that, Manchester City, who were the title favourites going into the campaign, have really been pretty average by their lofty standards. You know, they were, I felt, quite comfortably beaten 2-0 by Tottenham. I know they dominated a lot of the ball, but they didn't create a massive amount of chances in that game. And I think the lack of goals has got to be a huge concern for Pep Guardiola, because they're always going to concede. That's just the way they play. But as an attacking unit, really, they're becoming incredibly reliant on Kevin De Bruyne. And you know, that's not quite what you used to expect of Man City.
Conveniently then, Mark, there was rumours today that Jack Grealish could be heading to Manchester City. Is that a target you think has, or a story that has substance?
Well, Pep Guardiola has already said that you know, Jack Grealish, I think he called him one of the best players in the league. So he clearly rates him. I mean, I think if I was the boss of Pep Guardiola, I'd wonder why, you know, you keep on needing to spend £100 million on players to make the team better. When, you know, if you're the best coach in the world, you should be able to maybe get a little bit more out of the players that he's got. You know, is Jack Grealish, at the moment he is, but is he going to be that much better than, say, Phil Foden, who you would have big hopes for? They've just spent a lot of money on Ferran Torres, the Spanish winger who scored a hat-trick for them in their recent Nations League league game. So I think the talent is there. It just feels like it's not quite clicking, and that they have lost some important players. David Silva, although last season maybe wasn't his best one, you can see why he eventually left the club. If you go back over the last 5 or 6 years, hugely influential for them. Fernandinho as well. So I wonder if maybe you're looking in the wrong areas, or Pep Guardiola's looking in the wrong areas if it's Jack Grealish. I think somebody in sort of deeper central midfield. I haven't been overly convinced by Rodri in that position, and I wonder if that's an area maybe that Pep Guardiola should be looking at, because they're not stopping teams on the counter-attack. It's just too easy to play through them, and you know, when you're quite ambitious in your way you play, like Manchester City are, you need somebody to sense that danger in midfield. And Fernandinho quite often used to do the odd tactical foul and slow the game down. He knew how to play that role perfectly, and I think that would be an area I would be looking at. And then also another striker. I'm not sure if Gabriel Jesus is up to sort of replacing Sergio Aguero long term. So if I was Pep Guardiola, I'd be looking for a striker and a defensive midfielder. As good as Jack Grealish is, I think they've got players that can maybe, you know, do that role similarly.
City sitting in 13th, but top of the table are Tottenham Hotspur. And Stephen Kelly, that must excite you.
Absolutely. Buzzing with the fact that they're up there and in about, and they're playing some really good football. They're solid. They look really, really solid, which is not surprising for Mourinho's side. But you know, for them to be in the fight at this moment, and with Kane and Son, who are just on absolute fire, it's really enjoyable.
Stephen, looking at Harry Kane, he's added a dimension to his game. Not just a goal scorer, his distribution and his contribution even at the weekend was incredible.
Oh yeah, no, I think he's. I've always watched him and thought, you know what, he's so good technically, because I've seen him drop deep and hit 60-yard balls on his left foot. Not that he has a weak foot, and I used to think, God, he's such a fantastic passer the ball. And then just this season, those passes have ended up being turned directly into goals. So it's almost like I've been able to see it before. It's just they haven't been converted the way it was. And before with Tottenham, he had someone like Christian Eriksen, so he didn't have to drop as deep to create. Now every time he comes into the hole or picks up a ball, Son automatically just takes that forward role, and they have people just running past him. So his link of play, but his passing has been exquisite.
There's a lot of Champions League action tonight as well. There are two games underway. Sevilla are leading Krasnodar 1-0, and Rennes and Chelsea are nil all. But I think all eyes will be on Manchester United. Mark, they laboured at the weekend, and they laboured the last time out again against Istanbul, losing actually to them. But I think when it comes to the Champions League, they do seem to be able to turn it on. But it is a pressure situation, just given their performances.
Oh, it is. And, you know, this is a team that looked like they'd done the hard work, really, in this group, beating Paris Saint-Germain and then thrashing Leipzig. And then to lose the way they did to Başakşehir was an embarrassment, really. It wasn't just a defeat. I mean, the first goal from the corner where everybody went forward is just something that you really shouldn't be seeing at amateur sort of levels, never mind professional ones. So they've put the pressure on themselves. And this is the type of game where Manchester United have sort of struggled with under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. They're fine when there's loads of space, and they're fine when actually, you know, they've got that ability to counter-attack against better teams. It's against kind of the smaller ones, if you like, where they really do, and you use the word labour there, it really is laboured and quite horrible to watch at times. So maybe in some ways they're better off playing against sort of better teams where they've got that space to really counter. I'm not sure they'll get that against Başakşehir. They should be good enough to win, but you're never quite sure about Manchester United, are you? I mean, I never sort of fully trust them to win any game at the moment.
Stephen, just from your point of view, having played at the top level, why would a team like Manchester United struggle against a team that, you know, ahead of this group, Başakşehir, you didn't think that they were going to even challenge Manchester United?
It is so hard, and we always talk about Manchester United. The word consistency always comes up when we have that conversation with them. And I think for them, you don't want to say lack of creativity, because they've got some extremely creative players in the team, but when they play against a smaller side or a more difficult side to break down, they find it hard. When teams are expansive, and like Mark said, when they push people forward and they have a lot of bodies, Manchester United are so capable of counter-attacking extremely well, so they kind of suck up pressure and then use that pace and power and precision when they go forward. But when teams are sitting deep and putting blocks of four, two rows of four in front of them, they find it very hard to pick them apart and break the lines, and I think that's where they struggle.
But even watching them at the weekend, Stephen, I mean, Martial missed a great opportunity, Rashford as well. They're just not converting the chances. They're relying on Bruno Fernandes to score penalties.
Yeah, and at the moment they're getting penalties every game, so that seems to be working. But no, I think they don't have Rashford. Again, he's up and down. At moments he looks fantastic. Martial as well, moments where they look brilliant, and they go on little runs of scoring three or four goals, and then they'll drop off for a little while. They don't have a striker or a centre forward who's consistently putting the goals away, and you know the same could be said for Man City at the moment. They're creating the odd little chances, but again, I think it's against lesser teams they find it harder to break down. But for me, having someone that's consistently gets you a goal every other game, that's invaluable, and Manchester United don't have that. They've got talent, they just don't have that consistency when it comes to goal scoring.
I saw a headline earlier, surely it's Cavani time, Mark.
I would like to see him in the team. I think he would be deserving of a spot in the starting 11. I've always been a big Martial fan, but it hasn't delivered consistently enough to be, I think, considered, you know, this undisputed central striker for Manchester United. So I definitely think it's time for Cavani. The way he took his goal against Everton was fantastic, but Cavani needs service, and quite often when he's been when he's been on the pitch, United have had nobody to cross the ball into him because everything becomes quite narrow and disjointed. I think there are two problems. One is a lack of creativity from deep, whether it's Matic, Fred or McTominay. They've all got their qualities, but I don't think anybody really sort of sets the attacks off like you would expect a top team to have somebody to be able to do that. And the other the other problem is the coach. That attacking build-up play that you're talking about there in terms of trying to break teams down, that's tradition, that's what a coach should be working on day in, day out, and I think that's what the best ones do, and maybe the average ones don't.
As Marie said, Chelsea are in action against Rennes. They beat Newcastle 2-0 at the weekend. They beat Sheffield United 4-1 last week. Timo Werner has already missed a sitter for them, and he missed a few good opportunities at the weekend too, Stephen.
Yeah, he has, but he's missed a few opportunities, but he's looked really good. I think he's broke really quickly. He's so pacey, and he's created some really good chances for himself. Actually, the assist for Abraham's goal was wonderfully worked. The pace he showed, breaking away from player, great balance of skill, and then the final ball. So for me, I think it will click for him because he showed some glimpses of just getting himself into really good positions. He may have missed a couple of sitters, and hopefully for himself and for Chelsea, he'll start scoring more. But at the moment, they're flying. They don't even need him to be scoring, to be honest. They seem to be getting goals from everywhere else on the pitch. And as a team, they just look very comfortable, and they've settled into the way they play and the way the manager wants them to play football.
Mark, Chelsea is starting to hit form, but how important with fixture madness and injuries to get qualification tonight?
I think it's absolutely massive to be able to qualify straight away. Solskjaer was talking about this as well, wasn't he, with Manchester United. I'm sure Klopp's thinking about it with Liverpool. It is madness. It's absolute madness what the players are being asked to do. And to be able to rest people for those last two games could be invaluable over what is already... It's normally a chaotic time, Christmas, in the Premier League. But this time around... I'm not sure it should be happening, but it is. And to be able to rest people for two midweeks could be absolutely massive.
Well, I think it's a good time to maybe hear Jurgen Klopp's rant over the weekend, because he's feeling exactly like that it's just too much right now.
Somebody tells me again about contracts and I go really nuts, because the contracts are made not for a COVID season. We all have to adapt. We adapt. You stand here with a face mask. We adapt to the situation. Would you have thought a year ago you would ever go somewhere with a face mask and have to stand there and we cannot be closer like this? That's the situation. So everything changed. But the contract with the broadcast is still, nope, we said we have this, so we keep this. What? Everything changed. The whole world changed. That's it.
Stephen, is he somebody you have a sympathy for?
I can totally understand, especially with looking at his squad, how depleted it's been through first of all, bad injuries that they've sustained to so many key players, and then the international break happens and Salah gets COVID and all these things thrown in amongst of us. So for him to throw on top of that fixture congestion in a really busy time of the year, and you know they're doing extremely well. The weekend it was a fantastic performance from players that were on the fringes for most of it. They're mostly fringe players, but they turned up, and I think they will be okay. But he is right. They have to be careful. You know, the decision that's been made to play all these fixtures and still get them in, it's all based around the fact that they have to fulfil what the contract says. And you know, at times sometimes they have to be looking at it in a different way.
Well, Mo Salah is back, Mark. I asked you, I think, last week, when would he be back? But now we know that he will be back for the Atalanta game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a quick recovery, isn't it, for Mohamed Salah? I mean, he obviously, you know, was not sort of suffering in terms of symptoms in, you know, with the COVID. I think it's a game maybe where you wouldn't even need to necessarily play Mohamed Salah, because I think there are, you know, qualification should be done. There are bigger games to come up in terms of the Premier League, a tricky game away at an awkward Brighton team at the weekend, and Jota has settled in unbelievably well into that front three. I mean, you couldn't have wished for a better start. So yeah, he could be back, but there's no need to push him. And I think that, you know, Jurgen Klopp needs to be careful with all of his players. But their attack, I think, is probably what's going to win them the league this season. It's not just that brilliant front three they've got now. Jota has just added a new dimension to them, and they'll probably just outscore the rest of their opponents from now until the end of the season, I would have thought.
Stephen, dare I say it, but I haven't really thought about Van Dijk and Gomez for a while.
I know. It's actually unbelievable to think that that's been the case. And it's funny because when we speak about before, we've talked about how much of an impact he's had in the squad. But then we also talked about that there were a better place now for him not to be there, that the team has moved on. And I think for me, what's really important about Liverpool is that the style of play that they play, it suits a lot of their players. I don't think you have to, I'm not saying none of the players are exceptional. They are, they're extraordinary players. But the way Klopp plays, it doesn't involve, it's not like Man City, you have to pass the ball a million times before they get to the goal and score. Liverpool are more than comfortable hitting the diagonal ball or stretching teams by using pace, and they use very different tactics to their teams at the moment that I think they can, a lot of players can fit into those roles. So for them not to be missing those players as such key roles just shows how well the manager must be working with these periphery players. Players are on the edge of the starting lineup, and then they come in, they all know their role extremely well. So you have to give full credit to Klopp for that.
And when Mark did mention how good the coaching is, or how important it is to have good coaching, Chelsea have taken the lead with Hudson-Odoi scoring the goal there in the last minute or so. Mark, just before we let you go, there was a bit of good news yesterday, a bit of a reprieve, I think, from the drama of the pandemic, that fans look like will be heading back into some football games anyway, shortly enough.
Good news on that front, up to 4,000 back, hopefully in English stadiums very soon. I think it's particularly important for those clubs sort of further down the pyramid, where even if it's only half that and they can get 2,000 in, it will still make, you know, a really big difference. It's not going to be like watching, even if you can get a ticket, it's not like, you know, you're going to enjoy the same experience as what you ordinarily would expect from the Premier League game, but it's that first step. And I think it's worked quite well in France, that they've had up to 5,000 in stadiums. Seen it little bits in Germany, and then they step back. Like I say, it's not perfect, but it's that first step, and I, you know, long may it sort of continue to sort of get better, because there's still something a little bit soul destroying about watching this great football and sort of, you know, a TV screen rather than being there yourself.
Mark, finally, before we let you go, did you watch Orlando City at the weekend and a crazy penalty shootout with Nani? That was good TV.
It's probably the... There were fans there, actually, for that game, and it's probably the most amazing penalty shootout I've ever seen. It lasted 21 minutes. Orlando City eventually progressed through against New York, but not before their goalkeeper, Pedro Galesi, was sent off during the shootout. He'd already been booked. He got another yellow card for encroachment, stepped off his line, saving what he thought was the winning penalty. The manager went running down the tunnel in celebration, had to be got back when the VAR decided he'd overstepped the line. He was then given another yellow card because that's a yellow card offence in MLS to do that. So he was sent off. They tried to bring on a reserve goalkeeper. They weren't allowed that. They didn't realise the rules. One of their outfield players went in goal, looked like an absolute sort of pub goalkeeper for the first one, got nowhere near it. Nani then had a chance to win it for Orlando, missed a penalty. So you assume that they were going out because this goalkeeper couldn't get anywhere near any of the shots. And then he amazingly saved a penalty. And the referee miscounted and thought that Orlando had won, blew his whistle, then realised that he hadn't got that right. And in fact, Orlando still needed to score another penalty, which they did. And they've gone through in MLS. Like I say, it was nearly 22 minutes in total from the first penalty to the last one. Absolute chaos. The referee definitely didn't cover himself in glory, but it was amazing to watch.
Well, it's definitely worth checking out online. It's there on Twitter if anyone is looking for it. Mark Landon, thanks so much. Stephen, I'm going to hang on to you for a second, if you don't mind, because there has been so much talk about Stephen Kenny over the last few days and the controversy surrounding that motivational video. And I think there's an awful lot of layers to it, not just the playing of the video, but also the leaking of the story and the communication and the narratives post the incident as well. Just as a former Republic of Ireland player, what's your take on it?
Thomas, I'm pretty disgusted that something is leaked out of camp like that, and it's got to the point where the manager has been scrutinised for a motivational video. Like, I don't know what was shown, I don't know the context of it, but I couldn't imagine it being something that was really, really bad in a sense. I'm sure it was something that was done to get the players to feel the importance of the game and make sure, you know, realise, you know, that even though this is a friendly, you're playing against England, and that's always a huge fixture for us. So for me, the motivation was an issue. The issue for me is how it got out and then the connotations that brings, because for the person to leak it directly to the media, they obviously don't have a very good relationship with Stephen Kenny, because to be that undermined, they obviously think that this is an offensive video, and they felt like this could be put him in a position where he could lose his job, because that's, the FAI dealt with it, they you know, they looked into it straight away, and you know, it seems okay at the moment, but you know, for someone to go behind his back and be able to come out and do that, it begs the question, who did this and why would they go about it? And you kind of feel the only reason they did it was because they felt that they weren't happy with what Stephen was doing.
Yeah, it's worrying really when you think about, as you said, the connotations and also what it means for the camp, and hopefully it is behind them now and they can move on to those World Cup qualifiers next year. Stephen Kelly, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with GAA.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Green Firm's new on-the-go chicken bites are natural, high in protein and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, I have to say, there was great excitement last night when Mickey Hart was announced as the new Louth senior football manager. I think it took an awful lot of people by surprise, but how has it been received in Louth itself? Well, former Louth footballer Shane Lennon joins us now. Shane.
Marie, yeah.
How are you? How was the reaction to the big news of Mickey Hart being Louth's new manager?
Yes, it was massive. Obviously, the phone started hopping yesterday, last night, about 8 o'clock, and the news went nationally so quick. I think I've never seen as much about Louth GAA on social media, probably since 2010. Like, and it was massive, like, giving the whole county a big lift, like, to get such high-profile name as Mickey Hart in over the senior team and obviously the under-20s, and with Gavin Devlin coming as head coach as well. So, obviously, the phone is hopping today, and like, it literally hasn't stopped the people on. Like, it's just a good news story, and it's lifted the whole county. And hopefully, obviously, we're disappointed the way the year ended. Obviously, we've been relegated to Division 4. But I think the whole new stadium and everything, it's a massive lift that the whole county needed, and thankfully we're getting.
So what does that mean now for expectations in Louth?
Yeah, like, obviously, expectations were probably... obviously, after COVID and that, and the couple of displays were probably, and I don't think I'm speaking out of turn saying this, I know a good lot of the players and said that the performance probably weren't up to it. I know the Cork game was very disappointing down there, shipped a big score, and then obviously a good display against Down and probably lifted things a wee bit for Championship. Then kind of went out with a wee bit of a whimper against Longford. Obviously, it's been highlighted that only one score that day. Like, and it's not the player's fault or the management. I think things were just, it was a difficult year, and obviously, this is going to lift the whole thing. Obviously, there's going to be new targets set for Mickey and the lads and the players. I'm sure there's a, I know I was listening to Peter Fitzpatrick, the chairman, this morning, and he said that the target is obviously Division 2 football. And I think that's a realistic goal, and obviously we have a new stadium coming, and that's where we want to be, where the county wants to be playing. And obviously, when you look at Tipperary and Cavan, that just doesn't come overnight. It comes from underage. Obviously, I'm involved with academy squads, and that's where we have to build it from now. And I think the transition from development squads into minor setups at under 17, and now obviously into Mickey and Gavin setup there with under 20s, I think it should be a good transition.
Shane, I can remember when Mick O'Dwyer came to Kildare in the early 90s and what it did for Kildare football and the lift it gave it. But I was listening to Oisín McConville this morning on Radio 1 on my way to work, and he was highlighting the task at hand for Mickey Hart, and he highlighted that some of the best footballers in Louth weren't even playing for Louth. How does Mickey Hart get those guys back and rejuvenate the whole team?
Yeah, like, I know it was very difficult, and like, obviously Wayne's hands were tied with some players, like, obviously, and some players had stepped away just for career-wise and were travelling and that, but a lot of them seem to be back in the country now and are eager to get back into it, I think. So, like, obviously, there's, like, the lift that this whole thing has given, like, a high-profile name like Mickey Hart, like, that should be enough. If you don't want to play at this stage and a high-profile manager and coaching like that, you'd have to question whether the player wants to play in the first place. So I think that's the lift it's going to give. If lads want to play with the county now, the opportunity's there for you. The next 2 or 3 years, you're going to be playing in a brand new stadium. And obviously, hopefully, the target obviously next year is going to be to get out of Division 4, which is very achievable. And going forward, obviously, pushing on, hopefully make obviously, Leinster is difficult, and that's probably a story for another day. But, like, to make inroads in the Leinster Championship, and I'm not going to say to win a Leinster Championship. As Peter Fitzpatrick said this morning, like, a realistic goal is, like, any team in Leinster, if you get a draw, you could make the Leinster final, and Tipperary and Cavan that have highlighted that over the last couple of weeks.
Shane, you mentioned that they're a quality manager, a new stadium on the way, but you see it at the grassroots level. Is there a talent wave coming through that he can work with?
Yeah, like, obviously, Wayne Cairns, who is over the... who was over the senior team up until this year, he was over a minor team, and I was actually selected with him in 2016 and 17. And in 2017, the minors made the Leinster minor final. Now, we did ship a bit of a beating in the final against Dublin, but I don't think, looking back at it, it's probably, we're not the only ones that have been in the receiving end of a result like that. So there is talent there. I think there's 5 or 6 of that squad actually played against Longford, and they're probably still only 22, 23. So, or even maybe less. So there's a lot of good talent coming through. Even last year's minor team have serious talent coming through. And even, like, they're not lads that we're going to miss out on. They're all on our doorstep. They're either in DKT on sports scholarships. They're up in DCU and they're in UCD. They're all around us. I think there's one lad in Letterkenny that's playing with the seniors this year. But I think everyone else is within touching distance to the county. So it's not as though, like, you have the problem, like, maybe of Mayo lads or Leitrim lads that have to travel. They're all living in Dublin. They're all on our doorsteps here. So I think we just have to utilise, get all them players back playing. And with a professional setup, and obviously, I know I've spoke to a couple of people today, and Mickey's, I don't think there's massive demands or anything like that on resources, but there will be certain things that county will have to step up to. And I think that's well within our grasp.
Shane, when you saw Dublin winning the 10 Leinsters on Saturday night, and if you can just think back to 2010 and that game, okay, I know it wasn't an ideal result, but it was still a really good Leinster football final. What has happened since then and now that they have pushed on and the rest of Leinster has lagged behind, do you think?
Yeah, like, it's very difficult. I know you can point at resources and you can point at a lot of things, but I was just reading something in the paper today and they were saying, like, in 05, and there was a big changes made in Dublin. They pushed on even from early as the 90s, so it doesn't just happen overnight. Like that, I know counties have to kind of step up to the mark. I know like Leinster and Copac are helping out there. There's at least Leinster Fund and some kind, I know Leinster are recipient of it, and Meath and Kildare and Wexford, to try get the counties back up to that stand, up to the competing in Leinster. I know it's massive, obviously you have the population end of things, and in Dublin you've a quarter of the population of the country living up there. But it's up to, we're in the same province, we have to kind of improve our standards as much as we can and try push on. Obviously Leinster is going to be difficult for the next years. There's no quick fix to it. I know people are saying pull the funding from Dublin. That doesn't work, and I don't think that is the answer to it either. The other counties have to step up to that mark and obviously improve the standards in the 11 counties.
And Shane, what do you think you need? Like, because, you know, we're talking about figures and we're talking about funding and we're talking about resources and we're talking about backroom services and nutritionists and gear, and all this is coming into the conversation. And I don't even think we can talk about players and population because you can't change that. But what does a county like Louth need to try and close that gap?
Yeah, like, obviously, it does come down to resource. But even the things, like, small things, like, just making the players feel important, like, and obviously, as probably you've seen the report that's out and about now, like, obviously, players want to be felt important, and they want to be able to have realistic targets, and, like, I know, I think it'd be very difficult for players to kind of maybe motivate themselves for a Talisman Cup, like, and as a Division 2 team or Division 3 or 4 team. So I think these things that of making a professional, proper nutritionist, proper catering after trainings, looking at that the players are getting looked after the same in each county. Obviously, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes in Dublin, but we have to just look at within, obviously, our small county and try to get as many resources, because there is people there with loads of goodwill in the county. And we see that now. Obviously, the county has launched a double house draw last year to win two houses, and even like the amount of goodwill, even from Nicky Harper announced last night, I know ticket sales are probably going up like that, even from that. Like, so there's loads of goodwill in the county, so we have to try and get as much resource as we can within the county, and obviously you need the support from Copa, from Leinster, and that to try and improve our standards as well.
Well, I think it's given all of us a lift anyway to see Mickey Hart going in. It's something to talk about and something to look forward to. We'll all be following Loud to see how you get on next year. Shane, just before we go, will you be coming out of retirement? Do you think you're done?
I definitely don't think I'll. It's 5 or 6 years since I wore the red jersey. I think I'll concentrate just in the club for another couple of years. But I know there's strong rumours. I know Paddy Keenan came up from Australia last week. There's rumours going around that Paddy's get back on board. But I don't know. I think.
Well, you've thrown it out there now anyway, Shane.
I think we leave it to the young lads. I think Mickey's going to focus on kind of building things from a lower or from the younger age group. So I'm glad to hand the baton on to some of the young lads.
Thanks so much, Shane. We'll talk to you soon. We're going to take a quick break and then we're back with Henry de Bromhead.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Healthy snacking made easy with Green Fern's high protein on the go range. Available in selected Tesco, Super Value, and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Well, the weekends of GAA action may be coming to an end, but for the National Hunt season, they're only starting to get better. And this weekend, it's Fairy House's Bar One Winter Festival, featuring the Royal Bond Novice Hurdle, a Drinmore Novice Chase, and the Hatton's Grace Hurdle is the feature. Last year's heroine, Honeysuckle, is back to defend her crown. And joining us on the line is Henry de Bromhead. Henry, I hope you're well, but more importantly, how's Honeysuckle?
Yeah, no, I'm okay anyhow. Thanks for your concern, Ruby. Honeysuckle seems good. She's in great form, and we're happy with her. Obviously, it's her first run back for the season, but she worked well last week, and all seems good.
Henry, last year she came here with a prep run under her belt. She'd had a run in Fairy House. This year, as you said, just said, she's coming here first time. Were you tempted to run her in the Liz Mullen, or are we always going to go here first time?
No, always going to go here. Basically, yeah, we just said we'd aim for this. Happy with her preparation so far. Hopefully it'll work out.
She had an incredible year last year. She went from here to win the Irish Champion Hurdle at the Dublin Racing Festival and then on to Cheltenham for the Mayor's Hurdle, where she beat Benny the Jew. Would you be looking at a similar sort of schedule, or having no prep and coming here, are you hoping to take in Christmas too?
I'd say obviously we'll get through Sunday and see how that goes. But if it went well, I think we'd sort of aim towards the Irish Champion Hurdle at Leopardstown. And then we'll enter, like last year, enter in both and the Mayor's Hurdle and the Champion Hurdle and see. But obviously we have to get through Sunday first. Yeah.
What would it take to tempt you away from the Mayor's Hurdle and runner in the Champion Hurdle?
I'd say obviously we'd want to compete pretty well in the Irish Champion, but yeah, look, last year we wanted to try and get her owner, Kenny Alexander, and obviously her and all of us, just get her to win at the festival. She wasn't right the year before, so she missed the Mayor's Novice Hurdle, and we decided to go with the Mayor's Hurdle. And thankfully, she won that, obviously. So, yeah, look, we might dip our toe into the Champion Hurdle. We'll see near the time, though. Obviously, we've got a lot of things to do between now and then.
Henry, you've plenty of runners over the weekend, and you also have Annexation in the Royal Bond. He was runner-up in the For Auction Novice Hurdle at Navan. Could you see him going a bit closer, or is he up against it?
Hey, look, he's in good form. That was a good run the other day. And they went no gallop, which probably didn't suit him. So, yeah, I'm kind of hoping at a big price he might have a chance of running into the money. I presume they'll go a stronger gallop in that. And hopefully that might suit him more.
Obviously, with COVID, lots of things have been rescheduled, which includes the Mayor's Hurdle, which should have been run at Easter time, and it's been run now, the Irish Stallion Farms EBF Mayor's Hurdle. You have Manila Melody in it. She was favourite in the Mayor's Novice Hurdle at Cheltenham last year, but ran disappointingly. Was there ever an excuse for that, and how is she?
Yeah, not really, to be honest. She probably ran a bit keen, and I mean, the winner dropped right out, I think, from memory. So we were a bit free and handy. We never really found anything, any major explanation. But she's in really good form. She's quite a stuffy mare, so we gave her a run in Galway, and she ran well. Felt she'd improved plenty for us. She's in good order. Slightly different this year. It's a Grade 2, obviously. The rescheduled race would normally be a Grade 1. And the novices, the current novice, so we're sort of deemed a second season novice. So the current novices of this year will get an allowance from us. So we already will already get be penalised for winning a Grade 3. And also then, you know, there's some good merits there. I think Willie has, she wears it well. You know, they're novices, so we're going to be giving them, they get an allowance also. So I haven't seen the actual weights. They haven't been published yet, but it makes it a probably slightly tougher task.
It'll be a good race all the same. And Henry, the wonderful weekend last weekend, starting in Ace with Notebook. You must have been delighted with him.
Yeah, brilliant. Delighted with him. Great to see him back to form. He was disappointing in the Arkell at Cheltenham. And he was deadly. Obviously, the race with Cashback coming down at the first, it made it marginally easier, but still, Fakir Duderi, we'd had a couple of tussles with him last year. So it was great to see him back and do it as well as he did.
And on Sunday then, what a lot of people see as a live Gold Cup horse, including myself, Manila Indo, he had a bit of a penalty kick in Navan, but it was nice to get it done and dusted.
Yeah, he did. My mother has given out about you. She said you weren't seeing him as a live Gold Cup contender. I didn't see the coverage after the race, but anyway,
I tell exactly what I said. I said we didn't learn anything on Sunday, but if you learned something that I didn't learn, please tell us.
I defended you to her, to be fair. So there you go. I did defend you, and I would agree with you. Yeah, look, it turned out to be, if you could say it now afterwards, I wasn't thinking this before the race, but it probably wasn't the strongest Grade 2, but he did it really nicely, and as you say, he couldn't have done it any better than he did. So yeah, we were delighted with him. He obviously was just chinned in the RSA last year, and look, there's plenty of them there, you know, so we'll see. But he's had a good start to his season.
obviously his owners have two horses of a similar level, and come Christmas time, they're both unlikely to run in the Savills. Would you consider the King George for one of them?
Yeah, we were thinking Mona Lee. He had his usual sort of slower start to his season as normal kind of thing. He always seems to take a run. So he ran nicely behind Presenting Percy and Kemboy. You sneak off to Thurles for what you think will be a soft conditions chase, and you end up taking on those two. But he ran well, and we're aiming him towards the King George. We were going to go last year, and I probably chickened out of it a little bit. So, yeah, we said we'll just go and give it a go this year.
And obviously last weekend, or the weekend before last in Cheltenham, put the kettle on Mare. You can slag me about, because I have been hard on her. Got her season off to a flying start in the Schlur Chase.
That's right, yeah. She was brilliant. Well, in fairness, I remember your comments, yeah, this time last year after she won the novice chase at Cheltenham, and it was probably fair enough on ratings, etc. at the time. But yeah, look, she's brilliant. She was amazing in the Arkell. She's come from winning novice chases through the summer last year. She's just progressing all the time, and at no stage of the race at Cheltenham last week did I think she'd win, bar maybe just approaching the last. She looked to be struggling the whole time. I don't think anyone did, including Aidan, but he was brilliant on her, and it's great to see her get up and win.
Would you be tempted by the Tingle Creek, or would you bring her back to Ireland?
Yeah, no, we won't do the Tingle Creek. Probably a bit soon for my liking to go back over there again. So I would say, if anything, we might go to the Grade 2 at Kempton. I was thinking possibly at Christmas. Yeah, Mona Lee's going over as well. Of course, that could be a suitable race for her, and then we'll head on straight on to the Champion Chase with her.
And one last one before we go, Henry. You resisted the temptation of the Morgiana hurdle with Aspire Tower. Will he be heading to Christmas after his win in the WKD hurdle?
Yeah, I think so. That's the plan. That's where we're aiming for. He seems in mighty form. He'll come on plenty for that run as well, which is good. So great to see him back to form. And he's only a four-year-old, obviously, but he's improving all the time. And I think that's the right place to go for him.
Anyway, thanks a million, Henry. Your yard of flying, long may it continue.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
I think I have a new favourite trainer. Henry, standing up to Ruby. I absolutely love it. Him on again.
Oh, he's definitely not afraid of me.
Isn't it amazing, though, in any sports that moms get upset when people have a go at their children? Like, Mrs. De Bromhead was seriously put out by you, Ruby.
Yeah, you'd want to have your I's dotted and your T's crossed to take on Sally De Bromhead.
Absolutely.
And Ruby Walton, there it's done. Just like that.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Snack smart with Green Fern's new high protein snacking range, available in selected Tesco, Super Value and convenience stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Well, Ireland is getting ready, we hope anyway, to exit level 5 lockdown very, very shortly. But what does that mean for indoor sports such as basketball? Well, Basketball Ireland CEO Bernard O'Byrne joins us now. Bernard, how are you? And what is the immediate future looking like for basketball and other indoor sports?
Well, I think, you know, we're ready to go. We've been ready for a while, but obviously everything has been on hold. So what we're looking for now really is a clear pathway back to playing our sport, particularly for our national league clubs and our international squads. So, you know, we're asking for government to talk to indoor sports, to consult with us, because we feel we have been marginalised and not too much attention paid to us. So, we want the politicians, the decision makers, to take into account the thousands and thousands of people who are interested in, you know, the 16, 17, 18 indoor sports that exist in Ireland. And, of course, from my own point of view, the number one indoor sport, basketball.
There obviously is worry when it comes to things being indoors, albeit schools and everything seem to be going okay. But do you feel that you can do it safely, Bernard? And do you have protocols and safety measures in place that you're confident can work?
Well, absolutely. You know, I think the statement or the idea that indoor sport, you know, in some way is very dangerous, much more dangerous, is not borne out by any medical evidence. And no medical evidence has been shown to us. And if we look around Europe, nearly all of the major leagues, basketball leagues in Europe, are either back or have a definite plan when they're coming back. So, you know, we are not looking for any shortcuts here. We actually were the sport that closed down first back in March, which is a long, long time ago. So we are responsible. We are careful. We don't want to endanger anybody. But, you know, we need a plan to get back to sport and to do it properly and safely.
Bernard, I see all the guidelines that are in place, put in place by Swim Ireland, my own children in swimming clubs. Do you think the government are really listening to you and taking on board what you're willing to do and trying to do?
I have to say, there's no evidence that they have been listening to us. I suppose the priority from a sport point of view, you'd have to wonder where is indoor sport in the list of priorities. And we recognise that it's a big challenge for government and whatever. We don't really want to be fighting with anybody. But we haven't been listened to. There hasn't even been a distinction between outdoor sport and indoor sport, except that the outdoor sports are the only ones that have been consulted and spoken to. So, for instance, I have a meeting tomorrow. I think it's my fourth meeting of the indoor sport group under the Federation of Irish Sport. And there's 17 or 18 sports. And we have been meeting, we've been talking, and we've been conveying messages through the CEO, Mary O'Connor. But there's no evidence that we've been listened to. So, to be honest, you know, we've asked our clubs to lobby TDs. At Basketball Ireland level, we have sent detailed letters to the Taoiseach, to the ministers, to the Taoiseach, and we would hope that at this stage, you know, they will consult us, they will listen to us, and they will realise the size of the cohort of people to whom this is really important, both mentally and physically.
And also, over the last few days as well, at an Oireachtas committee meeting, John Tracy, the CEO of Sport Ireland, said that he doesn't think he'll be seeing indoor sports any time soon until there is a vaccine. How worrying is this for you then?
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, certainly that was an interview he gave, and I've spoken to John since then. I think that was a very unfortunate use of language. And again, there's no medical evidence to back it up. I think John was trying to get across the point of view that we all have to be careful and we all have to be prudent, and we would agree with that. But there's actually no evidence that that indoor sport cannot be played until there's a vaccine. And nobody else has repeated that, or nobody else had ever said that before. So I think it was an unfortunate throwaway phrase, and I don't want to be fighting with John Tracy, so I'm not going to dwell on that.
So what's your plan, your next plan now, Bernard, to try and get things moving?
Well, our plan has been evolving over the last week or 2 weeks. As I said, we've asked all our basketball clubs to talk to their TDs and get them talking to the ministers, and we're doing it at a higher level. So we're all well aware that the decisions are being made now behind closed doors, and there'll be some announcement later in the week or early next week, which we presume will cover everything, not alone hospitality and all of that, but will also cover sport. And when something is said about sport, we want a specific comment about basketball, and we want it to be positive.
And if it's not? Bernard?
Hello, yeah?
If it's not, if there is no mention of basketball or indoor sports, then what?
Well, then we continue the battle. We think I would be saying to you and anybody that will listen to me that this is extremely unfair. You know, why should people who are dedicated and interested in indoor sports and in basketball, why should they not be listened to? You know, where is the evidence that indoor sports shouldn't be played? And we're talking about playing in very safe conditions. We're playing, you know, 50, maybe 40 or 50 people in a hall playing basketball, which the hall could hold 2,000 in the case of the arena. So we're talking about a very structured return and a very safe return. So if it doesn't happen, you know, we'll continue to kick up a fuss, and we'll fight for our sport and we'll fight for our members.
Okay, Bernard O'Byrne, CEO of Basketball Ireland, thanks so much for joining us. And I think everybody that's interested and involved in sport will be keeping an eye out on government announcements over the coming days.
I sure will. I hope the government do listen to them, but I'm afraid that that's about all we have time for.